It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. Some topics include care and feeding for those lovely flowers and flowering plants intended for your beloved on Valentine's Day, and pruning raspberries in spring and pruning overgrown shrubs. Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will be here to answer your questions about plants you want to grow or grow better. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. It's Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. First, the news. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander. Extension horticulturists Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes are here to answer your questions about the plants in your life inside and outside the home. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. Again, 1-866-780-9100. Or you can email your questions to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Again, that phone number, 1-866-780-9100. Hello, Richard and Cindy. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. You know, Valentine's Day is not far off. What are some things we should be aware of, know about when purchasing, for instance, cut flowers in arrangements?
Well, when you're looking for cut flowers, whether it be roses or something else, you always want to, of course, select the freshest flowers possible. So go to the florist and take a look at what they've got. Usually they have a ton of really good fresh stuff. And then you can kind of take a look at them. You often want flowers that are immature or just starting to open because you really want them to bloom well in your home and not be almost done blooming by the time they get to your house. So think bright, cheery colors. And there's more than roses out there. Even just daisies and carnations can make a really a nice Valentine's Day bouquet.
And what about caring for the arranged flowers?
Well, once you get them in your home, obviously you want to put them away from a heat source. So don't put them on top of something that gets warm or too close to a heating vent. And keep them away, too, from anything that's really cold. So not near the door as well. So you want to keep them in that kind of cool location away from bright light. And they'll last a little longer. And then keep them well watered. So add water occasionally. Check and make sure. You might have to add water every day for a few days. And then they often provide a little packet of Floralife or a little powdered solution sometimes that you can mix in for cut vase flowers. You might want to add that as well.
Okay. I was going to ask, I guess people send box flowers. They're very mm-hmm. pretty. Mm-hmm. Anything to remember or be mindful of when sending box flowers?
When you're sending box flowers, the most important thing is to get them in water as quickly as possible. They're usually in some sort of water tube, so they're okay for, you know, the transport or to your house, but it's a very limited amount of water, and you need to get them in water as quickly as possible. And the life of any cut flower, it's all about how clean, how good that water is, and that there's plenty of it.
And how about selecting flowering plants? I think azaleas are mm-hmm. are the ones that are popular at this point. Is that accurate?
Right. There's azaleas that are out there. There's cyclamen. There's also miniature roses in pots. I've even seen Venus flytraps as a Valentine's Day plant. You know, you don't want to catch your love in a trap, I guess. They're all available.
But they eat things.
I know. They'll take care of your fly problem, right? There's a lot of interesting things out there. There are a lot of really brightly colored flowers, too. You'll see some primulas coming up. They're all fairly easy to care for a couple of weeks. Just water them. Plants will probably need more light than maybe the cut flowers because they're going to photosynthesize. So give them maybe as much light as possible, but once again, keep them out of away from those heat sources and those cold drafts, and then water as needed. And then also I tell some people that remember some things aren't going to last forever as a houseplant, and azalea, as pretty as it is, usually doesn't make it. Mm. So enjoy it for the month that it's looking good, and then add it to the compost pile when it starts to look bad.
Good idea. Mm-hmm. Call in with your questions, listeners, if you have them for Cindy Haynes and Richard Giron on this Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa, 1-866-780-9100. That's 1-866-780-9100. Are there certain flowering plants that one should select and then know that you can plant it outside? Later?
Miniature roses are one that if you get the miniature roses in a pot, you can. If you can keep them alive and you've got 3 or 4 months, you've got to really keep them alive. So in a bright, sunny window, they can be planted outside in the spring. And they're actually pretty hardy if you have the right location, you know, full sun, good, fertile, well-drained soil. They're pretty hardy roses.
Okay. And places to go for purchasing flowers. I'm not asking you to promote any one place, but just some tips to keep in mind when deciding to purchase these flowers for Valentine's Day or any other time of the year.
Well, and a lot of places will have a lot of things. Discounts, stores, florists, even your local garden center. They all have things to purchase. And you might want to check out a couple of them. I mean, you only want to give your sweetheart the best stuff. So check out one or the other, and you can determine pretty quickly what looks good to you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And listeners, once again, if you have questions for either of our guests today about Valentine plants or flowers, call in at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email us at talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Well, moving just a little bit outside at this point, as far as looking at the landscape, some of us wonder about pruning that scraggly looking hedge out there. What are some thoughts on that? Is it time to prune?
Yeah, it's approaching time. We typically prune in late winter, sometime possibly in February, March, definitely before they begin to leaf out in the spring. And if we have a older shrub like a dogwood or a lilac, typically the best thing to do is go out there and select a few of the biggest stems, and then cut those off near the ground, or as close as you can to the ground. And that will get rid of the old growth. It will also encourage the shrub to produce new growth. And so you can do a little bit of that this year, you can do a little bit of that next year, and if you do that, you can keep the plant in a fairly young, vigorous state, where it's a very nice shaped plant, very healthy and very productive as far as flowers.
Okay. We have a caller coming in at 1-866-780-9100. Call in with your questions. We have Helen and Ames joining the conversation here. Helen, hello. What's your question?
My question is, I have a leftover poinsettia plant from last year. And I kept it around because it was green, and I kept it growing in the house. And I always thought you had to cover it up for a certain length of time to make it bloom again. But just before Christmas, it decided to bloom.
Awesome.
And it has beautiful red leaves at the tips of about 7 shoots. What have I done?
Well, you probably placed the natural photo period is we want short days to get poinsettias to rebloom. And the natural photo period is right, starting in October, to help initiate those short days and initiate blooms. So my guess is you had it in a window or in a room that you didn't have the lights on a lot at night, so you weren't interrupting that long night?
I certainly haven't had regular amounts of light and darkness. Mm-hmm. I opened the curtains at various times. I'm retired, so...
Right, and it's just one of those things that it happened. It likes you. It likes its spot. So it did very well and rewarded you with some really nice, showy poinsettia blooms, which is great.
I'm really pleased with it. I thought I was going to have to cover it rigidly for a certain length of time and then let a certain amount of light, so days of light be
and that's it. Yeah, and that's what we usually encourage if you want something in a poinsettia to bloom and you want to guarantee that it's blooming on time. But whatever you did it right, and I would suggest you do it again
next year.
I'm
afraid it was Mother Nature who did it right. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling, Helen. We appreciate it. We'll go next to Judy in Cedar Rapids. Judy, what's your question for Horticulture Day?
Hi.
Hi.
I have raspberries planted around what has been a black walnut tree. The tree has been cut down, but the jugulone or whatever I'm afraid is going to do in the raspberries. Is there something I can do to repair the soil or
actually,
so I can have raspberries?
Yeah, I'm not really concerned. Once the tree has been removed, that should take away that problem. Jugulone is a compound that is produced by the entire tree. It's present in the roots, the bark, the foliage, everything.
Right.
And yes, it does tend to inhibit the growth of plants. But it doesn't kill most plants outright. And once the tree is removed, then that threat should dissipate very quickly. So I'm not really concerned about that.
Okay. So what could I do come spring to kind of revive them? Because we had maybe 6 raspberries off each plant. They were really pathetic last year. So if I rake up the leaves again and the nuts that fell, what is there something else I can do to kind of jumpstart that and help them get going?
Okay, these are cultivated raspberries or wild raspberries?
No, cultivated, and they're fall bearing.
Okay. What I would be inclined to do is go out there sometime later on this month or March, and I would be inclined just to cut them right back to the ground, completely back to the ground.
Okay.
And go for just the fall crop, okay?
Mm-hmm.
In April, I would go out and fertilize them. I would just apply a all-purpose garden fertilizer, like a 10-10-10, just lightly fertilize them. And just let them come up and do their thing. And if you experience any prolonged dry periods in June, July, and August, go ahead and water once a week or so, and they should produce.
And now that the shade is gone from the walnut, they should actually be quite happy.
Okay.
I think the shade actually was the biggest problem for them was the shade. And also the competition for water and nutrients. Trees are very efficient at getting most of that stuff in the soil. So with the shade no longer there, with the competition no longer there, I think they're going to do a lot better.
Okay. Is there an organic equivalent to the garden variety 10-10-10 that you buy? I'm trying to do not chemical fertilizers.
You can typically find organic fertilizers at the garden center too, sure.
Okay.
And then you can also use a composted manure as well if you put it on really early.
Okay, like when I cut them back?
Yes, as early as possible so that it's really, you know, it takes a long time for it to start working.
Thanks, Judy. Good luck.
Thank you.
We appreciate the question. Well, we're going to take a very short break here, and when we return, Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will continue to answer your questions. Call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturist Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes are answering your questions about all things horticulture in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100, or you can email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We have an email from Ed in Iowa City. He asks, he planted an 18-inch hydrangea tree last fall with many blooms and branches. He says he did not protect with wire, and the rabbits have chewed branches and the blooms are gone. Is there any hope for it? He's wanting to know.
It probably will come back. It's probably going to come back from below where the rabbits actually ate it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to look a little different, at least for a little while.
Okay.
But it should.
It's likely it's going to survive.
Yes.
No guarantee.
Yeah.
It's been seriously damaged, but most shrubs don't give up that easily. So.
Right. And I would suggest a bigger fencing for next winter.
Okay. We'll go. Yeah. Did you have anything else to
add? I was going to say that
John Richard?
On campus, I have noticed quite a bit of damage to some of the hydrangeas.
Yeah.
You can tell because you walk by them or drive by them, and certain parts are pure white,
mm-hmm.
where the bark is gone.
Well, and it's been
it's very distinctive when you see that. You just know they've been chewing on them, and it doesn't take long before they can damage the plants severely. So,
and with all the snow, they've gotten better access to plants than they have in the past.
They can reach quite high. Mm-hmm. So
they've had practice, okay, mm-hmm. and they're hungry. We'll go to John in Muscatine. John, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Well, I had a couple questions about pin oak and red oak trees.
Okay.
One of them is some years they lose almost all their leaves fairly early, and then a lot of years they, like this year, on a lot of them, the leaves are still almost on there, and on the smaller ones, with the ice storm, it just puts them flat on the ground, you know, with that much extra weight. I don't know, is there a reason why some years they lose their leaves and other years they stay on?
A couple factors. Basically, age is a factor, and also the weather. As far as age, juvenile trees tend to hang on to their leaves longer than mature trees. So a younger tree tends to retain it longer than a larger, more mature tree. But also weather plays a factor, too, as far as the temperatures in the fall. And I think sometimes if we have, for example, a real cold temperature early in the fall season, where the temperatures might get below freezing, some trees tend to retain their foliage when that happens. Because when that happens, they don't go through their normal senescence process, where the leaf stalk gradually comes away from the trunk of the tree or the branch. And so when that happens, they kind of freeze, and things don't proceed like they normally do in the fall of the year. So if we have a unusual weather event in the fall where we have very cold temperatures early on, some trees, like some oaks and some maples, tend to retain their leaves longer than normal. So that can happen. But if you have a more typical normal fall, sometimes they fall off earlier.
So it varies. Is there a normal fall in Iowa?
Well, average, maybe okay. Not normal, but average. So weather plays a part in it, too, as far as the temperatures, the weather conditions. So that's a factor, too. And sometimes it's very hard to know exactly what they're going to do. But it's kind of interrelated.
Does that answer for you, John?
Yeah, and I had one more quick question
okay.
on the same oak trees.
Mm.
I have a few of them that I've planted and that are now get 25 and 30 years old, but for years they had tons of acorns on them, and now for the last 3 years, they've had, some of them have had no acorns and some of them very few acorns, and I wonder if that's a maturity deal too, or...
Well, it may be a maturity deal, but it also may be kind of a genetic thing, too, in that some trees are good seed producers every year. They just do it. And other trees are more sporadic, where they don't produce a good seed crop every year. So it kind of tends to be genetic. That's a factor. But also weather can be a factor, too. For example, the pin oaks and the red oaks, they flower in the spring. But the acorns that develop after flowering don't mature for 2 years. It takes them 2 years. With the other oaks, like the bur oaks and the white oaks, they mature within 1 year. Now, in the case of the pin oaks and the red oaks, 2 years ago, we had some very cold temperatures in spring when they were actually blooming. And because we had some very cold temperatures, it actually destroyed or damaged the flowers. So I noticed that many oak trees, like many pin oaks, for example, didn't have much in the way of fruit last fall
mm-hmm.
because their flowers were damaged or destroyed by those cold temperatures in the spring 2 years before that. So that can have a factor if you have something that affects the pollination and the fruit development on the tree. So I think that's what happened in the case of the pin oaks, because I know my pin oak had very few acorns really last year. Some years it's just loaded, and last year was fairly light. So
it doesn't mean you won't have plenty of acorns next year, mm-hmm. though.
I think I'm going to probably have a lot next spring. I mean, next fall. I'm just thinking that because...
it's going to make up for lost time.
It's going to make up for lost time, and I think 2 years ago we had a fairly nice spring, no extreme cold in the spring. And so I'm guessing probably next fall, a lot of acorns.
Thanks, John. Hope that does it for you. Good luck with your trees.
Yeah.
Bye-bye now. We'll go next to Helen in Altoona. Helen, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Several years ago, we had ornamental grasses planted per the landscaper's recommendation. I questioned their spreading, and he assured me with a mat that they would not spread. Well, that was wrong. Mm-hmm. Two springs ago, I nailed them with Roundup, mm-hmm. and the next last spring, there were still remnants. I nailed them again. My question is, once I see no signs of life, how soon can I replant in that area?
What kind of grass was it, by the way? Just
oh, dear.
Most grasses are not really that hard to kill. I mean, they can get to be large clumps, but certain things like, for example, ribbon grass,
mm-hmm. no.
Blue lime grass, they can be really tough to kill.
I want to say like there was a sergeant something or another. I mean, we got 50-cent names in this guy.
Okay. Well, I guess I would want to go 1 year without seeing it.
Right.
Okay.
If it was that hard to kill with Roundup twice, I would wait another
one full growing mm-hmm. season where I haven't seen it at all.
Okay.
And then I would assume it's safe to plant.
All right.
Because some grasses are kind of warm season, and they may be a little late in coming up, and
coming
you may not see anything until May or June. So, yeah, plant some annuals in that location to kind of keep the location, but wait another year before planting any perennial, especially a perennial grass.
I can handle that.
Okay.
All right.
Thank
you for your help.
Thanks for calling, Helen. We appreciate it. And we'll go to Charlotte in Charles City. Charlotte, we have a few minutes before the break. What's your question? Thanks for joining us.
Hi. Thanks for having me. My husband's actually the gardener, but we have had a stand of red raspberries that he planted. I think we've had them 3-4 years, and they've never borne fruit. They have spread, and the plants are healthy and beautiful. Last year, my sister-in-law wanted some red raspberries, so she dug a few of ours up, and they don't bear fruit at her house either. Is there such a variety we may have gotten inadvertently that doesn't bear fruit?
No, that shouldn't be the case. Should they bear fruit in the summer or in the fall of the year?
I believe it's the summer.
Okay. Two things come to mind. Make sure they get plenty of sun.
Well,
they're
going to
need at least 6 hours of direct sun.
Yeah.
The other thing is make sure they're not pruned incorrectly. Now, the summer-bearing raspberries, the actual canes live 2 years.
Okay.
The first year the canes come up out of the ground, they grow, but they don't do anything as far as fruit. The second year, those canes produce fruit, and then they die. So if you go out in the spring and prune them back severely, they'll never produce anything. Because you're pruning off the fruiting wood. So make sure you don't prune them too much in the spring.
Okay.
So what you should be doing was sometime in the next, let's say, 2 months, go out there and prune out the really small, spindly canes. Because they're not going to produce anything anyway.
Okay.
Leave the bigger, fatter canes.
All right.
And just cut out the very tips of the canes that have died because of winter injury and nothing else.
Okay.
And they should produce, hopefully.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We're coming up on a 5-minute break here, but when we return, Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes will be here to answer your questions about the plants in your life. This is Talk of Iowa. It's Horticulture Day. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Soy diesel looking for a little more oil from the bean. This is the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham. This week, the Obama administration called for an increase in the use of biodiesel. It's supposed to make big rigs and trucks run cleaner. But there's not enough soybean oil around to make biodiesel on the cheap. Sean Ali is here, and you've been talking to a guy who says we might be one step closer to fixing that.
Yeah, he's a true believer in biodiesel, and his name is Tom Clemente. He studies plant biology at the University of Nebraska. Clemente tells me that the problem with biodiesel is that we use pricey soybean oil to make it.
The downside is just not enough of the oil to really make a dent on petroleum. Really getting a bio-based, sustainable fuel from some sort of cropping system, you know, the production is going to have to be really up there.
Clemente figures that scientists can manipulate the genes inside soybeans to boost the oil content. But, you know, no one really knows exactly where these genes are. But recently, scientists have completed this big-picture map of soy's basic genetic makeup. And Clemente tells me that that's going to speed up development of oily soybeans, just for biodiesel.
So with this more oily soybean, any problem with it if it gets into our food system?
Well, the people I talk to say no. I mean, we already use a lot of soybean oil, and a lot of that is already genetically modified. This won't change much.
All right. Thanks, Sean.
You're welcome, Lester.
This is the Environment Report. When the computer age took off in the 1990s, a lot of people thought we'd use a lot less paper. Well, that's not happened. Julie Grant reports on why environmentalists are so concerned about all the paper we're still using in our offices and our homes.
Alan Hershkowitz is a scientist with the Natural Resources Defense Council. He says Americans use 7 times more paper than the average person on the planet, and computer printouts are just the beginning. Packaging, cigarettes, tissues, and toilet paper. Hershkowitz has seen firsthand the devastation the demand for all that paper is causing.
Ancient forests, forests that have existed way before Christ and Moses and Muhammad for 10,000 years, are being cut down to make toilet paper. A product that we use for less than 2 or 3 seconds, this does not make sense.
Hershkowitz says this deforestation causes more global warming pollution than all the trucks, buses, planes, and ships in the world combined. He scoffs at products like 3-ply toilet paper and compares using them to driving a gas-guzzling Hummer. In Europe and Asia, much more of the toilet paper is made from recycled paper. Americans get beat up in the international press for allowing their delicate buttocks to devastate the world's forests. For 5 years, the environmental group Greenpeace held protests against the Kimberly-Clark Corporation, maker of Kleenex tissues, for cutting Canada's boreal forest and other forests around the world for its products. But when Kimberly-Clark recently agreed to use 40% recycled fiber in its tissues, Greenpeace ended its protests. The concession may be good news for environmentalists, but it does not please late-night comedian Stephen Colbert.
Have you seen recycled toilet paper? Environmentalists, I swear, if you take away my plush toilet paper, I'm just going to use the next softest thing, spotted owls.
Most papermakers aren't opposed to using recycled material in their products. Dan Sandoval is an editor at the publication Recycling Today. He says the trend for companies around the world is toward more recycled content. Environmentalists want paper companies to move faster, and they say consumers also need to do their part. In the office, they want people to print less, and at home, they're asking people to stop buying toilet paper that's 3 layers thick.
Let's see if I can do this from the computer screen instead of paper. That's the Environment Report. I'm Lester Graham.
You did that without paper, Lester? Good job!
Support comes from the Park Foundation and the Gaylord and Dorothy Donnelly Foundation. You can find more information and post your comments at environmentreport.org. The Environment Report comes from the University of Michigan.
This is Horticulture Day on Talk of Iowa. I'm Julie Englander, and Extension Horticulturists Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes are here to answer your questions about the plants, flowers, flowering plants in your life. Call in at 1-866-780-9100. It's a free call, 1-866-780-9100, or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And Judy from Ames is with us. So, Judy, welcome to the program.
Thank you. For taking my call. Mm-hmm. I have one very fat rabbit who has stripped my rhododendron.
Those rabbits.
And my question is, do I dig it up and throw it away, or will it survive?
I would wait and see what it does next spring. I think you have a pretty good idea by early to mid-June if it's going to survive. And it may take a time for it to recover. It may take maybe a year or two for it to fully recover, maybe longer. But I think you have a pretty good idea by early to mid-June. So okay. I would just leave it. In the meantime, maybe put something around it so they can't cause additional damage, maybe some fencing, and just wait. And if, let's say, by mid-June, you really don't see much in the way of new growth, so recovery doesn't seem to be very good as far as a possibility, then at that point I'd replace it with another plant.
Okay, thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling, Judy. Appreciate it. And we'll go next to John in Davenport. John, welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yes, I've got a couple questions about grow lights. I've read that regular fluorescent tubes are as good as the fluorescent grow lights. Do you think that's true?
Sure.
Yep.
Yeah, we usually just tell you people to mix a warm white and a cool white fluorescent, and it's just as good as a couple of grow lights.
Oh, okay. And now, then compact fluorescent light bulbs, would they work then as well?
Well, as far as using fluorescent lights, the key there is to get them really close to the plants.
Right.
Within like 4 or 5, 6 inches. And if you do that and you have them on for typically 12, 14 hours per day, should be just fine. No problem.
So the compact light bulbs would work as well then?
They would. It's a little harder to get them as close to the plants. You know, that shop light fixture where you have the long tubes, it's kind of easy to get them close to a flat of seedlings that are emerging. But it's the same wavelengths on a compact fluorescent as it is with the long tubes. It's just got to get it really close.
Okay. And then the new LED grow lights, what do you think of those?
They could be awesome. With the LEDs, they can target just certain types of wavelengths of light, which are maybe for plant growth, for photosynthesis, it's all about the red and the blue wavelengths of light. So LEDs could be great for making sure they're very efficient and targeting what a plant needs to grow. They're really expensive now, and they're not, I don't think they're the best for plant growth right now. I think it's the fluorescence or those grow lights are a little bit better for plant growth than maybe, say, an LED. But I think in the future we're going to see more LEDs targeting for plant growth.
Okay.
That's what they're working with and researching for plant growth in space. So it's all about the LED.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thanks for the question, John. We appreciate it. Listeners, call in with your comment, with your questions about horticulture, plants in your life, 1-866-780-9100, or email us talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we've got an email from Crystal in Corville. She says she likes the show. She says, can you give tips on pruning grapes? They have not been pruned in many years, but they were still producing. She has a group grapevine, I gather.
Right. Well, grapevines, typically we prune those in the spring and or late winter. And so that would be any time in late February, March, and early April. And grapes basically produced just on the previous year's growth, just last year's growth. So they don't produce anything on old growth, growth that's maybe 2 or 3 years old, just last year's growth. When you have a healthy grapevine, you may have maybe 200 to 300 buds that are capable of producing fruit clusters, which is way too many. When they have too many, the grapes tend to be quite small, and they don't ripen very evenly. So that's not a very good situation. So you typically have to prune them and reduce the number of potential grape clusters. And typically what you're looking at is maybe around 30 to 60 grape clusters on the vine. That's what you're looking for. And so when you prune in the spring, you basically go out, and normally there's some type of training system they're growing on. And the most common system is a four-cane niffin system, where you have two wires. The bottom wire is basically 3 feet off the ground, and the upper wire is 6 feet off the ground. And what you do, you have all these vines growing on the two wires. And what you should do is go out there and select four canes on the upper wire, two going in each direction. And then you do the same thing on the bottom wire. You select four canes, two going in the same direction, okay? And what some people do is they take pieces of cloth, brightly colored cloth, and tie that to the canes they want to keep. And then they cut out the other canes completely, remove them completely.
Mm.
So you're basically left with four canes on the upper wire and then four canes on the bottom wire, okay? And then you go out to the back to the upper wire, and you select two canes, one going in each direction, and you prune those back to just one or two buds, and they're going to produce the shoots for next year's fruit. And you do the same thing on the bottom wire. You select two, one in each direction, and then cut those back to one or two buds. Okay? So you have the growth for next year. Then you go back to the remaining two canes on the upper part of the wire, and you cut those back according to their vigor. If you have a really, really vigorous vine or plant, you may cut them back to maybe 12 buds. And you do the same thing on the bottom two canes. And so when you're done, you count the number of buds, both on the fruiting canes and the short renewal spurs, and you should end up with maybe 40, 50, 60 buds based on the vigor.
And you have a lot of stuff that you've cut out and removed.
Right. So you're going to remove the vast majority of the plant, but you're left with a certain number of buds that can produce fruit.
All right. Wow, that's great advice.
So it's kind of complicated.
Yeah. It took a while.
But it's actually not that difficult. And we do have publications on that if they want additional information on it.
Okay. You're listening to Extension Horticulturists Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes from Iowa State University. They're our Talk of Iowa Horticulture Day guests. Call in with your questions, 1-866-780-9100. And we'll go to Matt in Des Moines now. Matt, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. My question is, we have some manicured bushes. I believe they're yews, and this winter has been awful on them. They're covered with snow and ice. And their shape right now is nowhere near what it was in the fall. And my question is, should I be knocking the snow and ice off of these bushes in order to retain their shape, or will they naturally go back to their shape once the spring comes and the snow and ice melt?
I think what I would do would be to wait until it gets above freezing, and hopefully that's soon, hopefully.
Any day now.
Hopefully. And then what I would do is go out and take a branch and just shake it gently. But take the actual branch really low down if you can and just shake it very gently, shaking off some of that ice and snow. But wait till it gets above freezing and then shake it very carefully. When it's below freezing, they tend to be much more brittle, but they tend to break off more easily. So wait till it gets above freezing and actually, if you can, grasp a branch near the base and just kind of shake it gently, shaking off some of that ice and snow.
Do you anticipate that they'll retain their shape?
I think they'll bounce back if you do that. I've done that to mine in my front yard a couple times where they were just kind of flopping on the ground, and you shake off the snow and the ice and they kind of come back to their normal position. But if they stay there for a long period of time, they're more likely to stay in that position. So I try to get it off if I can.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Well, thanks for calling, Matt. We've got another email from Mark. He says, I planted two apple and two pear trees last fall. Since they will probably not bear fruit for a few years, do I need to spray them this coming growing season?
No.
Okay.
Because our main reason that we spray those is to protect the fruit from insects. That's the main concern. So, no.
Okay. You have questions for Horticulture Day guests, Richard Geron and Cindy Haynes, call in at 1-866-780-9100 or email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We'll go next to Kelly in Davenport. Kelly, what's your question for today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
I have a big French lilac bush that is very overgrown, and I'd love to cut it back drastically to get into a nice shape, but I'm putting my house on the market to sell, and I'd like it still to look pretty mm-hmm. for when I show the house. Any suggestions?
Well, with overgrown lilacs, we often do something called renewal pruning, and you can start that process and realize that maybe you won't be there to finish it because sometimes it takes 3 years to really make it happen. But in the spring, early spring, before it buds out, or late this winter, so February, March, go out and select basically the largest stems and remove them to the ground. So those big kind of overgrown stems, take three or four of those out. Leave the others because that'll make it look kind of nice and full. And that will also leave that wood that will have some nice blooms for you later on in the spring. So that's what I would do. If you want to do a little bit of tip pruning, To take it down in size for those stems that still remain, you can do that. But be selective, because that's probably where your flowers are going to come from.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for calling, Kelly. We have Walt from Cedar Rapids also has a question about lilacs, I believe. Welcome, Walt.
Hey, thank you for taking the call. I have a very old hedgerow of lilacs, and they're pretty much not growing at all. Very few flowers the first part of the spring. How can I revitalize that, or how do I know which ones to trim back that are dead, I guess, or not blooming, and keep the ones that are still fresh?
Again, I would go out and select the big ones and cut them off near the ground and take several of those. I do the same thing the next year. Mm-hmm. And every time you do that, you're going to get new shoots coming up from the base. And so that's going to be much more vigorous growth. And if you do that for 3 or 4 years, they're going to look a lot better mm-hmm. in 3 or 4 years, and they're going to have a lot more flowers.
Would this be in the spring before blooming, or wait till
Yeah, I would do it. I would do it actually in March or early April.
Okay, very good. Thank you.
Some people cut them off right down to the ground. Everything. Mm-hmm. That's the drastic approach. I kind of shudder when I hear that. But they'll survive it.
Right.
But it's pretty damaging to them.
And
so
it often takes them a couple of years to really recover well.
They do.
From that.
Yeah.
Okay.
A couple
well,
years.
I'll try that. It's past due, I think, on these.
Mm-hmm. Have fun.
Thanks,
Walt.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. We appreciate it. We have an email from Gail. I have what appears to be cactus scale on a 2 or 3 foot high triangular cactus. She's not sure of its real name, but she found a picture of it on the web. Mm-hmm. She says, I found somewhat similar picture of it on the web, but mine has a little leaf at each sticker, at least at most little stickers. How can I treat it? I've been spraying a diluted solution of rubbing alcohol and water. Anything better to do?
If it's scale, truly scale, the alcohol is probably just cleaning the scale nicely. It's not doing mm-hmm. Too much. Usually for an insect like scale, we wait until we see something called the crawling stage, where we see the little ones basically crawling around, and then we can use insecticidal soap or safer soap and spray that on, and usually that takes care of at least that generation. Often we say with scale, too, you can just try and remove it with your hand or by picking it off on other things. But a cactus, that's not going to work so well. That's going to be maybe a little bit more difficult. A thing I'm going to mention with scale is that they are pretty hard to get rid of.
Very hard.
If it is scale. And if there's a lot of it and it's covering a large portion of this,
you have to be realistic.
It may not be worth it.
May not be possible.
Yeah, it may not be possible to get ahead of it. It takes a long time maybe for some scale to really cause some problems, but once they're there and they're consuming a lot of space, it's just very difficult to control.
What's a good definition or how does it look?
Well, a scale is basically an insect, and what you see basically is just like a bump mm-hmm. on the stem or the leaf tissue.
It's a little covering.
Right, because you don't see their body parts. You don't see their heads or their legs. All you see is this bump. And mm-hmm. oftentimes, they may be the same color as the branch or the mm-hmm. leaf, so they kind of blend in so you don't notice them at first. But they have this protective covering where they live underneath that. And so your traditional insecticides are contact-type materials. They have to come in contact with the actual insect. When you spray scale, you can't get at them,
right.
And so you can't kill them.
So this protective covering
works
every
just
time,
great.
Yeah, you're just mm-hmm. cleaning up the the insect, and it's not damaging it at all.
Just giving them a little bath.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So. Thank you. We'll go to Diane in Waterloo. Whoop, I guess Diane, are you there? I think maybe not, or there's a bad connection there. We'll go next to Marty in Ames. Marty, you're welcome to Horticulture Day. What's your question?
Yes, thank you. I appreciate your show. Two questions. How do you get rid of chipmunks from a garden? We've tried a variety of things, and they destroy everything. And then are these little arrow grow planters, do they work good in the house?
Oh, the ones for like the herbs and the lettuce?
Yeah.
They are okay. If you're going to have, there's not a lot of space there. And they work well for herbs and salads if they're kind of planted repeatedly, because there's just not a whole lot there to harvest. But mm-hmm. it's a great way to get the light source very close to the plant and have a nice water supply. So Yeah, they work really well, but it's only going to offer you maybe one or two salads before you've harvested everything. And I should mention many herbs that are grown indoors are not as potent or as strong or flavorful as those grown outdoors. So the sun's always better, but in the winter, this might not be a bad idea if you really need some fresh greens or fresh herbs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, as far as the chipmunks, you really don't have very many options with those. You really don't. I would not use a poison, obviously, in a yard situation. I would not. Trapping is an option, using a live trap.
They don't go in.
Yeah, they don't often.
If you put a bait in there, they typically will have some type, like sunflower seeds, something that would entice them into the trap. Now, obviously, when you live trap, you typically take them elsewhere. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, when you do that, oftentimes they die because they're in a different environment. So that can cause concern for people. But live trapping probably would be the best way of doing it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much.
Well, thanks for calling, Marty. We appreciate the call. Other listeners, if you have questions for Cindy Haynes and Richard Geron on Horticulture Day, call in at 1-866-780-9100. I always think of chipmunks because they're just impossible as little aerators throughout the grass. Because
that's
else?
A nice positive.
That's what you have to do. I don't know. I'll think about it that way. I got an email from Richard. He says, I recently bought an inexpensive orchid from a local big box store. It seems to be in good shape right now. What type of ongoing care do I need to provide so that it will continue to thrive? Can it make it to Valentine's Day, I'm wondering?
Mm-hmm. It probably can. It's probably a moth orchid or a phalaenopsis. That's the most commonly sold orchid, especially at some of the bigger box stores. And it's actually one of the easiest to care for. So put it in some bright light, put it in a window away from that cold draft or heat source, and water it occasionally. Maybe check to see if it needs water. You don't want it to completely dry out. Otherwise, the flowers will drop pretty quickly. And a moth orchid, if it's well cared for and is getting regular water, staying in a nice humid environment, maybe put it on a pebble tray with a little bit of water, it can bloom for 3 or 4 months. So it should easily make it to Valentine's Day.
Oh, good to know. We have a call from Christina in Fairfield. Christina, welcome to the program. What's your question?
Well, I really liked your explanation of how to prune grapes, but can you go into what happens the next year?
As far as?
Well, then what do you let grow and what do you prune back?
You do the same thing. Same thing every year.
Same process.
Same process every single year.
So during the summer, it's going to grow like mad?
It's going to grow like crazy again. You're going to be back to the same point. Mm-hmm. You have this huge, humongous vine, and you do the very same thing. And so when you're done pruning, you have kind of like a skeleton left, really. Much of the plant material is removed. So you do the very same thing every single year.
So the first year you had one, off of each wire, you had one main vine. And then you had an area that you were keeping for regrowth.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part I don't understand. Are you then going to let another one go out on the wire, or are you going to just keep that main one and just going to keep maturing year after year?
Oh, so the renewal renewal spur would be the one that maybe will become the one that produces fruit next year.
Right.
And then you choose another one to become the renewal spur.
And the fruiting cane that produced is going to be removed. It's
right.
going to be removed.
I see. So the lifespan of that fruiting cane is just...
Just 1 year?
That 1 year.
Yep.
Because it only produces fruit on the year before.
Right.
Great. Okay, thank you.
Okay, thanks for calling, Christina. We have an email. It's from Larry. How does one get rid of ferns that have invaded an established flower bed? The ferns I'm dealing with seem indestructible.
I would dig them up.
Larry from Alden.
You're probably going to have to be persistent.
Mm-hmm.
That one attempt probably isn't going to be enough. You may have to do that periodically over several months, but that's obviously one option. Just be persistent. Don't give up. The other option would be to use Roundup. And again, one application may not be enough on that too. So whatever you choose, I think it's going to require some repeated efforts.
Persistence.
Just don't give up.
Okay. That's a lot of dealing with plants and horticulture, isn't it? We have to wrap up this edition of Talk of Iowa's Horticulture Day, but we'll be back in 2 weeks. Richard Giron and Cindy Haynes, thanks for your horticulture expertise. We appreciate it. It's good to talk to you. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. We had technical support from Christina Sarnelli. I'm Julie Englander. Thanks for joining us. Thank you.